Okay, good morning, everybody, in person, on Zoom, sneezing, all of us. We continue today with the study discussion on karma, using the text, the book from Chogyam Trungpa. I want to go back to the last part of what we studied last time and continue from there, so I will read that. The last study session ended with a discussion on getting beyond good and bad karma and also the connection to moral karma and moral conduct. So the popular understanding of karma often reinforces conventional morality, encouraging us to develop good karma and avoid bad karma. Morality and karma do in some sense work together. Genuine morality is a state of awareness in which everything is looked at clearly and seen precisely, and everything is handled with deliberateness and precision. There are two approaches to that awareness. Either it could become good karma practice because you're trying to be good, or else that awareness could be transcending karma altogether. If your practice of discipline and morality does not have an ego-oriented purpose, but is just for the sake of being, rather than in order to be good, right? So when the emphasis is on being, then we're already there, right? We actually are already at home, and we're not trying to do something to get anywhere else. So then the doing becomes an expression of residing at home, so to speak, right? Being at home, being who we are, we naturally act in such a way, but the action is not for any other reason, just for itself, right? Not for a later result. So the idea of goal-oriented practice basically fades away. And then he says at the end of that, so those are the two approaches to morality. Trying to be good is creating karma, and trying to be just because you are being, which has no purpose, that's something to emphasize, no purpose, which is actually our practice, right, is an approach that transcends karma. The true morality, Sila Paramita, from that point of view, can only develop through the practice of meditation. Otherwise, you have some object in mind. Makes sense, right? Because in the practice of Zazen, we do get caught up in that, but the idea behind it, or the basic instruction is do it just for the sake of, sit for the sake of sitting, not for the sake of getting somewhere else, and not even for the sake of realization or arriving at realization, sit for the sake of sitting. Then when we practice that, then we get up for the sake of getting up, and we move for the sake of moving. And we hug for the sake of hugging, and we give for the sake of giving, not for any other reason. So there's a lot of freedom, actually, in this way of being, because we're not vested in anything. So continuing from that, the next part, he says, one problem in understanding karma, which is more particular to Westerners, is that a sense of guilt is built into the conventional Christian religion and tradition. The popular notion of Christianity encourages guilt because something went wrong at the beginning with original sin, right? And we have to pay off that debt. That guilt-ridden approach to morality is not even developing good karma, but it is just arousing further neurosis. I think many can attest to that, right? How we get caught up in feeling guilty. And this is the great guilt, so to speak, right? Which is almost on the side of bad karma. So in a way, in the name of practicing something good, with the addition of guilt creates the opposite of what we're trying to do with it, or go with it. Trying to hold on to your good karma too tightly is another problem. In which case, good karma can become bad karma. If you're very righteous about your good karma, or if you feel that you have to hang on to it and defend it, then it turns sour, it ends up on the side of bad karma. The genuine good karma is that somebody taught you how to practice sitting meditation. And you do that again and again and again so that you know how to handle and work with yourself. Right? And I think I've said it a bunch of times in different ways that the primary aspect of what we're doing in practice is actually learning to work with ourselves, because we are the problem and we are the solution. And it's not, it feels as if it's the other that is creating the irritation or the problem or whatever, right? And that's a way of pushing it out and not taking responsibility. But turning it around and taking responsibility, we can realize that we are the solution as well. So, but for that to happen, we have to learn to work with ourselves. We become irritated and we don't know what to do with that. Then it becomes the cause or the catalyst for all kinds of damage that we create because we refuse to take responsibility. And so turning it around, learning what he said, learning to handle yourself or work with yourself changes everything, which is the one of the primary aspects of sitting meditation. Having learned the technique of sitting practice of meditation is regarded as good karma. There is nothing more than that. That's how he ends it. There is nothing more to that or than that. If one reaches a point or has a moment where one is free of habit or conditioning and one is not pursuing either good or bad karma, you might wonder what guides one's actions at those moments. The Buddha on earth, Shakyamuni Buddha, is obviously an example of this. He led his life like anybody else. He lay down and slept at night. And he got up during the day. He had his meals and he washed himself. He wore his clothes, he breathed, and he winked his eyes. He behaved like any one of us. According to the Mahayana tradition, the Buddha on this earth was completely free of any karmic debt. His body and his existence on earth were due to the needs of sentient beings. He existed due to his compassion, not because he was entrapped by a certain final karmic debt of any kind. So, and he's saying that because, and this is the next part explaining, because on the other hand of that, the Hinayanist, the Hinayana, the small vehicle, would say that Buddha still had a final thing to work out. That's why he was on this earth and why he had to teach. He had to pay his last karmic debt. So that's the Hinayana point of view. However, regardless of that view, it is completely certain that the Buddha was free from any neurosis. It doesn't matter whether his body belonged to the samsaric people or to the enlightened ones. It doesn't really matter. And it's a good way to conclude that part because it really doesn't matter. Whatever we think about it is irrelevant. How we approach the teachings and how we embody them is all that matters, actually, right? To any teaching. In other words, it's not about the teaching or the teacher, it's about us. If you want to say something, I'm going to read another part and then open it up to a discussion. So if you want to say something about what I just read, make a note of that, either physical or mental. This part is about volitional action of karma. Before we focus on the consequences of karma, we are looking into the basic mechanism of karma, how it functions. The whole discussion of karma is based on understanding the idea of action. As previously discussed, the word itself, karma, is a Sanskrit term that means creation or action. Karma is a pattern of action. It consists of acts that produce or create further acts. When we talk about karma, we're not talking about an individual entity, some special karmic force that is separate from the existing world energy. Instead, karma refers to an interdependent situation. Fire, for instance, is a whole karmic situation we could say that the karma of fire, the action or activity of fire, produces heat. We can't just point to one thing, one entity, and say that this is the karma of fire, of the fire. Instead, we have to talk about a number of factors, the fuel, the flame, and the intensity of the fire, which is itself dependent on fuel. From this point of view, karma is abstract, a concept that describes an interdependent situation rather than being a single entity or a thing. Which is, I think, very helpful, right? To not, we can pick something out and isolate it and then talk about it or have issues with it, but it's just not realistic in terms of how things arise. So to understand that things depend on things, in a way, it takes it down a few notches, I think, because we may not be as hot about it, realizing, yeah, it feels this way, but there are many other factors that I don't know about, I know nothing about. So maybe I shouldn't get so uptight or upset about this situation, this person, my reactivity, or anything. Or the state of the world. However, although karma may be abstract, karmic situations are not based on some abstract cosmic law or the abstract aspect of morality or anything like that. Rather, before morality begins, before cosmic law begins, there is an energy that creates volitional action. Karma arises from the energy of confusion, chaos, and ignorance. That is the origin of karma. Confusion, chaos, ignorance. In order for karma to function, we have to have the meeting of two situations which produce a spark of light, so to speak. Rubbing two sticks together produces fire and heat. Similarly, we have to have a basic environment, a sympathetic environment or ground to produce karma. The environment is ignorance. Karma is based on our psychological state rather than anything else. Ignorance is the original psychological state where the karmic situation is born and develops. This is, I think, very important, right? And we may think, no, that's not true. It's not really up to me, and there's nothing I can do about it at this point. Maybe later on I will be able to, but right now, based on my development or, you know, psychological or spiritual development, that's all I'm able to do, which we may think, but it doesn't negate what he's saying. So we can't say this either this or that. There is me feeling this way, and there is that. The environment is ignorance. Karma is based on a psychological state rather than anything else. So I want to stop there for a bit and see where we're at. Any questions, thoughts about that? Say something so I can have some tea.
I can maybe share something. Can people hear me?
Yeah, thank you.
Both of these passages reminded me, actually, this past Thanksgiving, I was going through Grand Central and I walked by a store called Karma and Luck. And I took a photo of the sign because I thought it was pretty funny, so I'll put it up on Discord. But those words, karma and luck, running together, because we're talking about, you know, good karma, bad karma, also the volitional element of karma. And I guess if, you know, like people equate, you know, karma with being lucky, and it reminded me a long time ago. Sometimes people give me a hard time because they say, like, oh, you're so lucky you got this job, or you know, I bought a book and it had the author's autograph in it. Oh, you're so lucky. And I was complaining to a friend about, like, I was like, I don't know where this comes from, that, like, oh, you're so lucky. And my friend stopped and he said, you're not lucky, you're cared for. And sort of seeing the karma and luck store and then remembering this really poignant statement my friend made, me interpreting it now in the light of a lot of this discussion, you know, if your passage through life, you know, things are caring for you, it sort of begs the question of, are you caring for others as well? and how this, you know, sort of is a sort of intertwined web of care and attention that's brought to things, and that's maybe I don't know. At least for me, it struck me as a better way to think about karma than necessarily good, bad, lucky, you know, unlucky, you know, and such. It's a sense of care between you know, we receive and also supply. So anyway, just wanted to share that.
Thank you. So a sense of care, a sense of attention, right? So, and care can cut through, right? And you know, we do this, there are many reasons why we do that, but one of the reasons why we tackle that and look at such a text is to examine our notions of karma, right? Because we all have notions of karma. Even if we think we don't understand, we have collected all kinds of ideas along the way, and we think, well, this is my opinion, or this is my ideas about karma. And it's important to examine that and to dissolve any idea, so good, bad, or lucky, or unlucky, or anything, right? This is just labels that we, along the way, slap on it, or somebody slapped onto it, and then we took it with us to go, and then decided this is, I think that too. But essentially this right now, this moment, is the only place to do something different. It's the only place to realize the power of karma, and the only place to do something different, or to move in a different direction. But moving in a different direction requires us to let go of our ideas, right? Because as long as we have ideas, it's predetermined by those ideas, right? My direction is done, is predetermined. And I'm going to move in that direction for the rest of my life, unless I'm willing to release the grip on my opinions and ideas, right? So another way to refer to that is what we call the great death. If I'm unwilling to die today, then I live by ideas and opinions. So, yeah.
So it was very helpful to me to think about karma, you know, being born of ignorance, right? And I think ignorance is not in the sense of a not knowing. It's a sense of, I think I know, right? I think that this is how it should be, or I think that I know what's happening here. And that ignorance is what causes the disconnect, the gap, I think. Because if we approach, you know, life from a position of not knowing, as he's saying, I think he refers to it as just being, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it puts you in a place where it's almost as if karma cannot attach to you. Because you are just being, you're operating from a place of not knowing, rather than that place of ignorance, which is, I see ignorance as, I think I know.
Right, and so let's connect that to what he was saying before, the guilt, right? So the issue of sin, right, the original sin. And, you know, to sin means to miss the mark, to miss the point, right? That's the same as ignoring, right? It could be right there, but I miss it. So ignorance, I ignore reality, and I'm holding on to the idea of knowing reality, so connecting it to what you said, I think I know. I think I know. If I don't think, I don't know. Right?
Right.
And that's the gateway. That's the gateway. This is why Zazen, as he says again and again, is the way out of it, out of that loop. If we practice correctly, right? We can sit Zazen and then further that, basically, or deepen that attachment. But to see that the connection with the original sin, right? So to miss the point, that's what we do. But it's not back then, it's today. So we could be ignoring today, right? So there are those who sit beside the bucket of rice and die of starvation. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
We sit beside the most precious thing ever, yet we quantify ourselves. And we think of ourselves separated from. That's the sin. That's the miss the point. We think we are not everything. Mm-hmm. We think we are separated. As long as that thought is the predominant thought, right, in our lives, then there is delusion and there is ignorance. Yeah, thank you. Did somebody raise the hand? Sugiyoko, you raise your hand or? Okay. Kate.
So I just have a clarifying question.
Sure.
We're talking about like the roots of karma being confusion, chaos, ignorance. But that makes karma sound like a bad thing. But I know there's good and bad karma, right? So I'm a little confused.
Okay, ask the question again in a different way. You confused about confusion?
No, I'm confused about karma itself.
Okay.
Whether it's just a neutral thing or a bad thing. If it comes from chaos, confusion, and ignorance, that makes it sound like a bad thing.
It creates something negative consequences, right? Right? So from confusion comes this kind of consequences, right? Because we are not moving from a place of clarity, right? And there will be a lot of pain that we create, suffering that we create because we're not clear, right? We're not clear about this. I'm not talking about later, I'm talking about now. We're not clear about this one here. So the confusion is about who we are. So if we have a confusion about who we are, then what we do will also be confused. Because it's based on a false notion of who I am and of who you are, right? So it's the same thing. So that it creates negative consequences, right? So being clear can create positive consequences, right? Consequences. But what we were talking about before is we have to be watchful not to create something out of that or not to be attached to the good consequences that I want to create later or I am creating, right? So there is, of course, creating good karma is essentially better than creating bad karma, right? But the next step is to examine, am I becoming attached to that as the one who is creating good karma, right? So based on practice, right, or the Dharma, the teaching, right, Buddhas do not know that they're Buddhas. What does that mean? It means that you'll know in the same way of knowing, right? You'll know that you're creating good karma, but you are. But you're not doing it for the sake of creating good karma. So that's the freedom from being vested in outcome or being vested in tomorrow. Yeah. So, let me just make sure that we're on the same page with Kate.
Okay. Not necessarily like the consequences. I'm trying to understand the concept of it.
Karma means action, right? As he explained before, as we talked about, it doesn't mean anything. The word itself means action. Action that creates further actions or further consequences. That's all it means.
Okay.
It's how we live with that that makes the difference, right? It just is. So we don't have to understand more about it more than just the explanation. The question is not what it means. The question is how we work with it, right? That's the practice. So the word itself just means action, right? Okay, raise on.
So I'm building on this. At some point, the terms good and bad would disappear.
Yes.
You would get to a point where they would be meaningless.
Yes.
There's the action, and then you go to the next moment. So whatever's happening is what's happening.
Right, the Xinjin Mei, right? We talked about that in Xinjin Mei. Do you remember the trust in mind, right? So you get beyond good and bad. Do not get caught up in good or bad. Then the supreme way is without difficulty, right? It's to get away from preferences of good or bad. Yeah, so that's what we're talking about, right? So not to get attached to, yes, it sounds logical to hold on to good and to let go of bad. But the problem is with the holding on, right? Who is holding on is the question.
So then karma becomes karma. It's just karma.
Right. Yeah, it's right. It's something to...
It doesn't disappear.
It doesn't disappear, but then there is a way to be free within, right? So an enlightened person does not ignore causation. Second koan, right? From the Mumon Khan, right? So to not ignore it is to be free of it within it. Not to delete something or, ignore. Yeah, that's good. Anyone else? On Zoom, if you do, we may not see your hand if you raise it. So just unmute and go for it. Yeah. Fushin, go ahead. Go for it.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We're okay, good. Great. I really appreciated what the time you had to offer in terms of his comment about not lucky you are cared for. During one of our discussions, our last discussion on cause and effect, we have been talking about responsibility. And Sigyoku offered, we were struggling with that word because it's such a loaded word for us in this world today, responsibility associated with blame and guilt and fault and all that. And we're talking about it outside of that normal paradigm. And she offered a new definition for responsibility, which I've been playing with and really have loved. And it's called taking care of. And I think it is such a poignant word in terms of karma. I mean, if karma is action, then that's where we're standing, that's what that is. We're taking care of the interdependent effect that we have in the universe. So
yeah.
I just wanted to offer that.
Yeah, thank you. Right. So recognizing can lead to that, right? Recognizing that the way we are, what we do matters greatly, leads to that. Leads to the awakening of that kind of action. Right? The birth of this kind of action. Yeah. Right. And it changes, right? Because the responsibility, the word itself can feel burdensome, right? It can feel heavy. But what you're saying is lightening it up a little bit. Right. Giving it life. Yeah. Go ahead.
I just wanted to bring up, before, karma then wouldn't be the thing that comes back to you. It's the action that caused whatever it is that's happening then. Yeah?
Yeah. Come
so
back.
That's why
right.
It's not good or bad. It's not the thing that comes back to you. It's not luck. It's the action that caused something to happen. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, right. And, the word luck ignores what he was saying before, that nothing exists in isolation from anything. Mm-hmm. Right? So we call it luck because we don't know. We don't know what happened before. We don't know what led to that. Mm-hmm. So we just label it as luck. And in other words, we don't know.
And I like the cared for aspect as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. Should I keep going or anybody? Go ahead.
Okay. So I'd like to comment about a little bit on the reading and then another idea. And then I'm going to bring it back to an overall question that I have.
Go for it.
From the first section in the reading, there was a dialogue on the Buddha and when he was like on his actions on his body. So he would have desires just like us. He would go to bed, he would wake up, he would need to eat and clean himself. Okay, that aside, I was thinking about freedom from pursuing good karma and freedom from running away from bad karma and what it means to sit down in meditation. And so even when we act as though, we're free from all the influences, then we find ourselves sitting here peacefully in meditation. We find ourselves actually seated here. And then the next struggle that happens when we place our attention on our breath is that the dream forms in front of us. It comes to us, and it's distraction. And so even in meditation, we have a very, very, very deep, I guess, emotional bond with karma, and it just can't help but spill into our mind, and which is why I guess cultivating samadhi is so important, because that is the freedom. But my question is that in order to perform, it seems to me like in order to perform any action, you need to sort of dream it, because it's such a deep part of us. And so for the Buddha to desire to go to sleep, you know, desire to eat, desire to, let's say, clean himself, and he actually does those things, how can the enlightened Buddha perform action being free from karma, which is the same question as, what does good karma look like, and what is its function? Because I'm not too crystal clear on that, because it seems to me, and with my current understanding, that in order to perform any action, you need a desire to satisfy. So that's where I'm a little glossy. I don't fully see it.
Well, desire to satisfy, okay. So there are all kinds, there are many ways of doing everything, right? We all need to eat. There are all kinds of ways to eat, right? You can eat to nurture the body, or you can eat to try to fill a bottomless void, right? So the eating is the eating, right? It's how you eat. So in relation to that, it would be eating because the body needs nourishment, right? So we do it because life is saying this is what needs to be done. So we do what needs to be done, but it's not for any other reason. You see, the reason is also already there. The reason and the action are actually merged. Because when you're thirsty, you just pick up a glass of water and you drink, right? It's not, I am fulfilling a desire. You see, obviously, your body needs to survive, and you give it what it needs to survive. Now, again, there are all kinds of ways of sustaining the body, right? You can indulge, and you can take care of it, right? So when you indulge, for example, it could be stepping outside of caring for it, right? And then you can harm it, right? So if you do it within that boundary of taking care of it, with the attention on the body, knowing your body, knowing what its true needs are, then you nurture it. If you ignore that, then you harm it with the same substance, food or whatever, right? Water, even water. We read that, a few weeks ago, right? Somebody drank too much and died. So you can drink too much and die.
No, that was the summer.
Yeah. Right, summer. Okay, so... Yeah, so you can take something that is necessary for sustaining your body, but how you consume it is crucial, right? So, and if you are in alignment with your body, you're more likely to consume it as needed, not as desired, right? And then from there to everything else. Everything else in life, right? Am I doing what I'm doing from being aligned with who I am? Or am I doing it from being aligned with the idea of who I am?
So
that's the difference.
Just clarification, what I'm understanding is that it seems like your sense of self is distinct from both the need of your body and its solution. So its desire and its proper action is held separate from you. And it just sort of, it's like, if you need to eat, then eat. And then that just sort of solves itself. So where's the sense of self in the context? So is there, because it is a big leap in thinking to remove yourself from the, I guess, desires you have and say that they're needs and they may be satisfied by, you know, action of the body. I guess, but then where are you in this model?
Nowhere to be found.
Nowhere to be found.
That's the answer. So, I'm not saying it's simple, but nowhere to be found is the good news.
Not separate.
Not separate.
No.
Well, because
this itself in isolation, it's not that.
No, it's because when merged, you're nowhere else to be found. We talk about merging, right? So the you and the action are merged. And that's all there is. So yeah, nowhere else to be found. What work with that?
Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna keep going. And if you do wanna say something, again, take a note of that. I'm gonna read another part and open it up again. So this is about the birth of karma. The birth of karma starts when we decide to mind our own business and create ourselves as an angry person, a passionate person, an ignorant person, or whatever there may be. We have given birth to karma. So this is good because it's connecting the separate sense of self with karma, right? The idea of separate sense of self or conceptual self with karma. The energy of aggression, passion, and ignorance reinforces our belief in our individuality, right? Again, the energy of aggression, passion, and ignorance reinforces our belief in our individuality. Each time you put out this kind of energy, you get threatened, feeling that putting out your energy may not be a valid thing. This creates constant feedback. Finally, you become hardened and solid. It's like producing butter from milk. You churn and churn and churn the milk, and finally the liquid milk becomes solid butter. And this is actually a great analogy, because we churn and churn and churn primarily about ourselves. Most of our thinking is hijacked by ourselves. It is about ourselves. If we can take a break from that, you will see how much energy is actually freed up to do other things. So the churning and churning, so there's that. It takes energy, but the analogy of taking milk and creating butter from that is very fitting, because we are creating a fixed sense of self, which is very easy to see when somebody says something against that. Then we get upset. Somebody says, you're wrong. You know what you're talking about. Right? You don't know what you're talking about. How could you say that? It sounds stupid. Well, even if you think they think that, that's enough to make you upset, right? Even if they don't actually say it. So in this sense, karma is the impulse to create. Or we could more accurately say that it is the tendency to create. There is some direction or desire to make something solid, but we are still uncertain about the validity of what we're doing. So we tend to do it more, very politely. Traditionally, as we discussed, the birth of karma is symbolized by a potter producing a clay pot on a potter's wheel. The wheel turns constantly, going on and on. Finally, as the wheel keeps turning, you create a pot, which can hold other things, water, flour, food, or whatever. We have produced a tremendous container or vessel in which things can be accommodated and that we can use to mark the outline of the boundaries of our own territory. What belongs to me? What belongs to others? And so forth. So it's a way of creating that barrier, the layer that divides us from other people and from reality, right? So we often don't look at that. We look at what we create rather than what it does or the harm it causes. Or we're obsessed with what we create. And then he says, so the basic starting point of karma is that fundamental ignorance. You ignore the messages coming in. You ignore the messages coming in, and you put out your own messages through your passion, aggression, and ignorance as a constant subconscious act. That is the starting point of karma, the birth of karma. What we have been discussing here is connected with the first skanda, or upset aspect of ego, which is form, first kanda. So we could say that karmic creation comes from the realm of form. From here means the forms of touchable objects, and also how we begin to freeze the relationship of this and that. So, and really good connection, very clear connection between the development of karma and development of ego, or egoic self, or who we are. So it's very clear. At least somebody's nodding.
That was just going through my head.
Okay, that's good.
Karma is based on a permanent ego. When you get rid of the permanent ego, then karma disappears, but it's that kind of karma that's disappearing.
Right. Exactly. Yes. Not the action. Action and consequences. Right. So action and consequences. Yes. If something fixed is no longer there, so then there is the. So we merge with that. When we merge with that, we're free of that. Like anything else, when we are merged, we are not at the mercy of. Being outside of it, we are at the mercy of it. It's a big difference there. So, yeah, where are we at about this?
What did you just say?
What? I don't know.
No, it was really good. When we are merged, we...
It's like people asking me, how did you cook something? I don't know.
I know.
Give me the recipe.
Right? Give me the recipe. I don't know. I want to make something.
Yes.
I don't know.
You got to figure it out on your own. you know that. Actually, yeah, go ahead.
I've been thinking, thank you, by the way, everyone, for your input and questions. I'm learning a lot from the questions as well. I was thinking about, it's nice to think about good luck, right? And we deserve that because we must have done something, or someone else must have done something, but that's ours and we've earned it. But I was thinking about, I'm putting all of that in quotation marks.
Just raise the volume a little bit.
Sure. I don't actually think that. I'm just saying it. But I was thinking about bad luck and how we tend to think, I tend to think of bad luck as either just bad luck, just something bad just happens. It's not anything that I did, or it's just a thing that happened. Or I think about all the things that I did wrong to cause that thing to happen. And like I'm thinking as I'm hearing everything, of how to, like, I understand cerebrally the concept of radical acceptance. I read the book. I like the concept. I get the concept on an intellectual level. But I don't know. Like, it's, I guess I have more of a kind of seeking guidance question rather than a theoretical question. Because how does one release themselves from this idea that if something bad happens, it is, maybe your lack of care, right? If responsibility is care, then did you not care enough? Is the universe not taking care of you? You know what I mean? Like, should I just stick to the idea that sometimes bad things just happen?
So bad things happen. They are bad. This is a very big question because, yes, it may feel bad, right? But how do I know what is going to lead to later on, right? It feels bad because I don't like it, or because it hurts me, or because it hurts people that I care about, right? So what we call bad things happen all the time, what we call good things happen all the time, and that's very self-centered way of seeing things, right? Because I may call it bad, you may call it good. So it's definitely not universal in nature, right? We say, well, even, there is pain, right? but sometimes pain can lead to something, can grow, to growth, right? Suffering is considered bad, but suffering can lead to something amazing, right? Because it could free you. It could show you how you create issues, and then it could be a teacher, right? Also, challenges and suffering, we can see the attachment and we can realize, recognize how much more suffering the attachment creates, right? So we can see, okay, fine, you know, I don't know about radical acceptance and all that, but then what if I don't? Well, I don't have to walk, okay, put aside radical acceptance and look at when not radically accepting, what happens, right? So don't try to buy into an idea, but look at the way we are creating more suffering when we are not, or as a result of not fully accepting, right? That's the best way to learn, because then, you know, you learn from within, not because somebody said something to you, right? Once again, and then and the radical merging, right? So it's more radical merging than accepting, right? You radically merged, so you don't step out of the situation to pass judgment on it. Do you see? You all merge with the situation, but who's there to complain about it or to call it something good or bad? There's nobody there. Because you're fully with it. You're fully accepting it. You're fully going through that. Right? So we teach it to kids, right? You know, they want to go somewhere else. They want to be somewhere else. They want to arrive when we're not arriving. We try to bring their attention back to this. We try to help them be more merged with the call or with the situation, right? This is where we are now, and there's that, all distractions. But that's not a good teacher. Go ahead.
So, with all these things with karma and everything coming about and trying to like write some notes and talk about my past part karma and my present and past suffering and situations that you work out, you know, had a conversation with someone and I said, like, oh my God, I feel so sorry for you when I share the story that, you know, I was abandoned by my mother at a very young age. And I was like, oh my God, that's like the worst thing that could happen to a child. And you know, and in my situation, I was like, I was raised by my sisters and I ended up being mothered by five other people, you know? So I lost one, but I gained, you know, five more. So it was a different situation. And that thing created this amazing opportunity of me being so close to each and every one of them, and I got to live with each one of them at one time or another, and it was a really an amazing experience, because in different household I was at different, like the oldest, like a twin, like a youngest, or like I was, you know, in different situations. So I got to learn a lot about being in different spaces, not the oldest in this and not the only girl. And so if from thinking that it was a bad karma, a bad situation, a bad thing that happened to me, it turned out to be an amazing thing. And I also went from living in Mexico in a third world country and everything, coming into the United States and having an amazing life, right? So it all depends on, in one way, it could be like a horrific experience for someone, but in another sense, it could be an amazing opportunity for a different and a better type of life. So, you know, when I started looking at that and I started going back and saying, I was like, wow, I had to go through all of that to be where I am now.
Right.
Right? And it's looking at life and things from a little bit of a different perspective. Maybe when you're going through it, it doesn't feel that amazing. It's sometimes I didn't like to be bossed around by my older sisters and being told what to do. You're not my mother, you know, that kind of a thing. But eventually, later on, I realized, you know, what a blessing it was for me. You know, maybe for somebody else might think of it as terrible, 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 and they can get out of that terrible karma mentality, right? But for me, I was like, it was a bad situation for a moment, but it turned out to be an amazing opportunity, right? right? So it all depends on where you're at and how you're looking at it. And,
right.
You know, I don't think about it as a bad karma at this point in my life. I think it was like, you know, an amazing experience, an amazing journey so far.
Right, you know, you probably know there are many stories that were created for the sake of teaching, wisdom teaching about that, right, good and bad, and staying away from that. The one famous one is this guy, you know, won lottery, right, and he bought this amazing car, and then his friends came, oh, lucky you are, this is amazing. Then he got into a car accident. They went to visit him in the hospital. How unlucky you are that you're in the hospital. While he was in the hospital, his house, there was a landslide, his house crashed, and how lucky you are to be in the hospital. And then all he said is maybe. So, and he refused to take, to label it. Lucky or unlucky. And that was the gist of the story, right? Refusal to label it. I don't know. In other words, I don't know. I don't know. Lucky, I don't know. I'm just here. Right? And because we really don't know. That's about, the other thing is catalyst. You talk about something that can be catalyst to something else. What's happening in Israel right now, it's horrific by any measure for everybody, but maybe that will be the catalyst for a two-state solution. Maybe, right? We don't know that. But maybe, unfortunately, we are like that, dumb human beings, and we have to go through a lot of suffering before we realize there's a better way to be, right? Individually and collectively. So maybe that will be the catalyst that will give birth to prosperity. We don't know that. So then if it does, we look back, we say that was terrible. That was a terrible thing that led to a good thing. It's very messy because it's endless. It was good, it was bad. It was good, but it led to something bad. It was bad, led to something good. We could do without it. We could do without attachment to bad, to good and bad. We'll go back to Xinjiang Mei when we're done with this, by the way. So, yeah, we have to reignite that. Anyone else, or should I keep going? Yeah.
With the reward and punishment, in the sense of deserving,
yeah.
I think those are so deep in us.
Right.
The need to be appreciated and so on. I went to the store the other day, bought some stuff, and the cashier was new and was totally for toots. And she forgot to bring up the broccoli that I bought, and so I said, well, you know, you forgot to bring up the broccoli, so I should get a pat on the back, and right. And so I get home, and I look at the receipt, and I see that she charged me for the bag that I brought.
Right.
And then I just laughed, right, that, I mean, both of those things were kind of automatic workings of the universe, and that
yep.
I should get a reward, and that the reward was just another turning of the wheel.
Right.
So it's all turning of the wheel and taking care. I don't know. On some level, it just becomes what you do. That it's not, and then it loses that sense of deserving or whatever. That, you know, she didn't bring it up. Okay, the thing that you do as a customer is you tell them to bring it up, and then you move on. It's not that you did something great or special. It's what the exchange should be between the customer and the cashier who's with us.
Right, so
it's really hard to break out of that.
Right, so the practice of no trace is very fitting, right? So no trace, no trace. I don't know. You do what you do. You go back. You remind her that, you know, she didn't charge you for the broccoli. You prefer broccoli. You go on. That's it. It's not that, well, you know, then you come home and you see you pay too much. But there's no but to that. There's no but to it. It's just that, right? So she charged you for a bag that you didn't buy. So that's it.
Right.
So there is to it. There's nothing more to it. But we narrate everything.
I did it.
No, you didn't. I know. No. We as human beings.
Right.
You know, it's that. You know, we are so accustomed to adding or narrating our lives as we go. What does it mean? Does it mean this? Should I do this? Was that a mistake? Did I do something good? Did I do something bad? So it doesn't exist until we do it, and then we create it, and then we create and it exists because we create. right? And the other thing is, which I want to go back to, what he says, you ignore the messages coming in and you put out your own messages through your passion, aggression, and ignorance as a constant subconscious act. So ignoring the messages coming in, that's the great sin, right? So we ignore reality as it is. Instead of listening to life, we are listening to the narrator. We are listening to what we ourselves are creating. Then there is a problem. It doesn't match. Or sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, right? If it goes along with that, yes. If it doesn't, it doesn't match. I don't like it. So that's the practice, right? To dissolve the hand or the tendency to attach or to create something. I'm going to move on to somebody on Zoom that is in the waiting list.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, Daikyo, go ahead.
Yeah, so just mentioning what you guys were discussing, I think, you know, the practical thing I'm not doing that is what perpetuates these situations is the arise of resentment in our kind of feelings, you know, and resentment to, and it could be on anything, you know, like a resentment of, you know, bad place in the restaurant because they charge me too much, or, you know, resentment to somebody who wrongs us for some reason, resentment to the mother that left us, resentment to all these situations, you know, where resentment is the key element. We tend to maintain that situation important, and it is like not gone, not leaving no traces, like we're saying. So I see, you know, that on the practical level, what I notice is that every time I feel resentment about something that happens, you know, some situation, and it could be super small, it could be big, I'm trying to kind of to take a closer look at it and see how I can kind of use that meditation practice to merge into the reality of it without attaching that resentment to the situation. You know? And it's tough because, I mean, you know, it kind of keeps arising if the wrong is too heavy for us. But it's a good teacher on how to kind of let go of that resentment.
Yeah, thank you for that, Daikyo. Yeah, resentment is a very, very common state, right? Or state of being or something that arises. And we can go along with that, or as you say, we can stop and take a look at what is supporting that, right? What is it about, right? What is it that's going on here? Who's resenting? What am I resenting? And more than that, what is the resentment creating right now in me? Right, in terms of further suffering.
Oh. I think that's the key. I mean, like
further delusion.
You tend to suffer way longer.
Yeah.
If you keep on resenting, and also your actions coming from that resentment are usually less wholesome, and tend to have like a lot more issues and generate more resentment. You know, and you can see that. I mean, like that's the whole Middle Eastern problem. It's full of resentments that are so deep that they don't seem to be able to manage them. They don't seem to be able to deal with them. And also, resentment is a way of for us to not accepting the reality as it is.
Yeah,
we are putting the name of a person or somebody into the kind of the culprit for whatever happens to us, and we are not accepting the reality of it.
Right, thank you. And one second. So one thing about that is the resentment, if we look at it deeply, I think what we'll see is that we all see that the resentment is actually not about the other person. The resentment is about me protecting me, and I refuse to let go of me, because if I let go of me, then the resentment fades away. It's that. The resentment sustains me. As long as I am holding on to resentment, I am sustaining who I think I am. When I'm willing to let go of that, we don't have to do anything about resentment, because it will naturally not be there. It will not be sustained without me. And I will not be sustained without the resentment. So Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead.
Just bouncing all of that.
Go.
I just wanted to note that it's interesting that resent is actually spelled and meant as resent, as in the brain keeps resending it out. The signal is going out. We're choosing to do that. We don't have to choose to do that. I'm not going to send that out again.
Right. That's what he was saying. You know, the constant feedback of the feedback of the feedback. That's what it is, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the meaning of that, right? It keeps repeating.
Resent.
Right. And then we end up in a loop for decades or for life.
Right.
It's a loop. And that's, more than anything, it's just sad. If there is something to be sad about, it's that. Right? Because it's a life wasted. It's a shame, right? To actually live life like that. And it's very common, right? So, okay. So this is another part I want to read and we may finish with that. Sometimes people talk about not creating any more karma, but that's very tricky. Trying to not create karma quite possibly creates further karma. It depends on how you go about it. You think you are going ahead without creating karma, but karma is approaching you behind. You can't just purely do good in order to burn out your karma or purely do bad in order to burn out karma. In fact, in order to not create further karma, your ignorance would have to no longer be functioning. That's asking quite a lot. Sometimes we try to see the origin of karma in time, trying to find the starting point when ignorance began and set karma in motion. Karma originates when there is no concept. That could be right now, or it could be hundreds of millions of millions of billions of years ago. That's purely up to you. You can't measure your karma with an astrological or computerized prediction. At this point, the idea of time and space is useless. In fact, we're not talking about time and space from this point of view. We are talking about a spacer and a timer. When you're on the path, you have already stepped into the situation of time. You are constantly being now and now and now and now. Even the attainment of enlightenment from this point of view is the attainment of now rather than the attainment of totality. Or perhaps we could say that your attainment of totality is also your attainment of absolute nowness. So therefore, it excludes the past or the future. So when we're talking about the whole origin of karma, we're not talking about good karma or bad karma. We're talking about how the whole manufacture of karma, the whole force, began. It's like talking about the creation of electricity. Whether you switch the electricity on or off, it's a part of a larger electrical game altogether. As we tread the path, we move back toward the original open space, the space before ignorance and bewilderment arise. So if we are able to get back to the origin, therefore the whole thing arose, before the whole thing arose, you might wonder, therefore, why we don't set the whole thing back in motion, revolving the same karmic patterns, right? If we actually arrive at that place. And he says, we don't make that same mistake twice, because it's such a gigantic mistake, a huge mistake, and it makes a tremendous impression on us. It's total mistake and total awakeness at the same time. So it can't happen twice from that point of view. Moreover, you are going back to the origin, the original situation, rather than manufacturing something. Once you go back to the origin, there is less chance of recurrence. Right, of repeating all what Myogen just said, right, to redo something again and again. You can still see your original mistake, and so you can avoid making it again. Then you become a Buddha, or whatever you might call it, which is that you are awakened from the hangover. Ultimately, this world is not regarded as debt, this world we're living in. It becomes a heavy debt when your ignorance is involved. But it's quite possible to have a free world, a world without debt. The Buddhas and Bodhisattvas function in a world without death. It is possible, they say. So, what do you think? Yeah?
Just asking about a word. What's the difference between the Buddha and a Bodhisattva?
Bodhisattva is awakened being. Buddha is awakening, right? So, but the awakened being, right? The Bodhisattva. So, sattva is the being. Body is awakened. So you practice awakening.
How would you use those words, I guess, properly? Buddha and Bodhisattva?
Well, the Buddha, okay, so Buddha refers to all often in our tradition to Shakyamuni Buddha, right? We talk the Buddha, right? But it's the Buddha nature, it's the Buddha, it's you are Buddha, right? It's that. But it's the practice of learning how to follow that, which is what we follow when we practice. Bodhisattva follows Buddha nature. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyone else? Go ahead.
No,
you just want to smile, okay. So, yeah, we'll put that on the record. A smile was added. anyone on Zoom? Yeah.
Quick question, just because it's something that I've always been not unable to reconcile, but I've just been unsure how to place it all. A lot of what we've discussed today resonates with me in my understanding of karma, but the one kind of thing that throws it off is sometimes when we talk about merit accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just always kind of been unsure if that was just a gimme by the people that were teaching these things to people that maybe weren't quite there yet and go like, yeah, you get points for doing
right.
good and stuff or whatever.
Right.
Just a white lie of sorts. But, just because it's not like, I don't know enough about Buddhist cosmology to say that there's a tally person at the end of the week, when you get off the wheel and they go, you've acquired X amount of points and you can see the scoreboard or curious how this fits into our discussion of karma.
Well, this is the Pure Land,
mm-hmm.
right? It's up to us. So, it's not doing all these things so we can end up in heaven later,
okay.
right? Even Jesus didn't teach that, right?
Right.
People taught that. But he said, heaven is in the midst of you. This is the Pure Land,
right.
You want to trash it, trash it, right? But whatever we do, it's not about later. Because this is it, right? So wisdom teachings at the core teach that.
Mm-hmm.
Any wisdom teaching teaches that. It's not gonna teach later, it's teaching now.
Right?
Right? So then, and it relieves you from doing something for the sake of later.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it doesn't relieve you from consequences.
Right?
Right? But it frees your energy. Good. So, we're going to leave it at that. I'm not going to keep reading. We'll find another time to continue or maybe interlace that with other study. Fuxin, do you want to say a few words about this evening's discussion? And
certainly. Thank you very much. I did send out a Zoom. Whether you participated in the cause and effect journey into series or not, you're welcome to join tonight at 5:00. It's another opportunity for us to reflect and share. And in particular, I'm taking it into the world of looking at our precepts. This is so perfect that we got this message from Jinru about Jikai.
Right.
Because, that's an opportunity to really look more deeply into our precepts. And I was reading something about Jikai. It was reminding us, why take a public ceremony in which you accept the vows of the precepts. And it was such a nice link and a nice description of, well, when we get married, we take vows in the presence of others in order to cement our commitment in the witnessing of others, and it makes it a a very different experience than to keep it private. And so I just, I thought that was really a perfect timing, Jinru, that that came out, because tonight that's what we're going to kind of focus on a little bit in terms of how do our precepts address this world of karma that we're talking about. So I'd love to have anybody join. It will be a discussion, and we will post the discussion on the Discord. So come if you're able and interested.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. And right. So for those who are considering Jukai, yes, show up for Fuxin's workshop. This is the first step. Then thank you for making the connection. So if you are considering that, if you have questions, don't hesitate to reach out. Even if you think it may not be the right time, ask the question. It's the right time to ask the question, always. Okay, so thank you for that. Okay.